Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Infrared is a new horror film set in the found footage genre about two siblings shooting a TV show in a haunted, abandoned school. And it's screening at Luna Leaderville for one night only on Friday, March the 4th, with a Q&A with the writers, directors, and stars. But we have them, thankfully, here before that to talk a bit more about Infrared, this new horror film. And one person, so yeah, I'm talking to directors Robert Livings and Randy Nunlal Jr., and star Greg Sestero, author of The Disaster Artist, Star of the Room, and The Best Friends Saga. So I'll start with you, Greg. Greg, you play the caretaker of an abandoned, possibly haunted school. And I would say this is a different role for you, or that I've seen you do in some of the other films. What attracted you to starring in Infrared?
I really enjoy working with passionate filmmakers. And as you know, I also love Perth and I love Luna. So it was sort of a match made in heaven. And I read the outline for the story and I love the idea of collaborating and trying to do something totally different. I was living in Arizona on this isolated ranch for a while, and I came across some really interesting characters, to say the least. And so when I started reading the outline for Infrared, I immediately thought of this character, this person that I'd come across, who was put me through a pretty interesting ordeal. And I always love to take my true life experiences and pour them into whichever project I'm working on, as you probably know pretty well. So I just saw this as a great opportunity to do something totally different. And ever since I've made The Room and wrote The Disaster Artist, that's sort of my goal, is to do, just try different things and surprise your audience. And it was just a really cool, fun project to work on. And I tried to do something totally different. And I remember when we finished filming that day, it was almost like I had run a marathon in a really good way. I was like, man, I don't know what to do. I think I'm just going to go to In-N-Out Burger at 1 a.m. and sit through the drive-thru. That was sort of my celebration. But it was just a lot of fun to work with Rob and Randy and go into a genre that I really like. I was a big fan of the original Blair Witch, and it was a really fun challenge to try to bring this guy to life.
Yes, I mean, you are an adopted son of Perth. You visited Luna and presented there many a time, and it's always been a great experience and a great crowd. And for people who know you and know your work, I think this is definitely something different. You know, there are recognizable elements, but there's also, it takes it into a turn that I won't spoil. But with the film Infrared, Robert and Randy, what inspired you to make this film, to kind of to go into this genre of the found footage horror film?
So I think for us, we'd just done a film called The Other Girl, which we'd done during COVID, and it was as small as you can get. Three actors, three cast members. So me and Randy were on camera, and we had Austin on boom. Austin, who's in the film as the sound guy. And we wanted to take it to the next level, and we'd always talked about doing a genre film, and we were like, well, how can we do this? Like, we were still like deep in the midst of COVID, and we're like, we want to keep the crew down, we want to keep the cast down. How do we make it so the crew is the cast? And then it was like, found footage. And Randy and I had this idea, and we were like, well, let's expand on that. And I think for us, it was, there's so much stigma around found footage, so we were like, well, we want to make sure it's got to be character driven. And it has to work as if it's a film that works as a non-found footage, then it will work as a found footage. So we were really, really like took our time developing the sibling relationship, which is what the center of the film was about. And then we're like, all right, cool. Who's this other character that's going to come into play? And obviously that's where Greg came in. So that was kind of it for us. And, I was joking before that Randy's the quiet one, but Randy,
I'm the quiet one. We just wanted to do something fun, and found footage before was something I'm not really familiar with. I've seen a few found footage films, so to prepare for this film, did a lot of research, watched a lot of films. In particular, I was looking at civil found footage. When they're always filming certain things, it doesn't make sense to me. So I was intrigued by the logic behind like when they're filming. So that's something we really focused on with this film in particular.
And it's unfortunate that, I mean, there's so, obviously I saw a smile there, Tristan, so you've seen the film, so you understand what we're getting at there, but we'll leave the rest of the mystery up to the audience to go and see it.
I mean, that's a very good point you make, Randy, about, you know, fan footage that, you know, characters will be in tremendous danger, and it's like, you know, I think people's first instinct is like, let's lighten the load and then drop this camera and get right to safety. Yeah. But I think it's built into the film that these characters want to, you know, they are intentionally putting themselves into this situation because they want to make a TV show. They want to kind of, well, one character in particular wants to become famous. And it does kind of, you know, the found footage, Greg mentioned Blair Witch Project, but there's been many kind of, but it's also kind of become a television staple, and these types of shows of paranormal hauntings and kind of going to abandoned places is kind of just like, you know, it's just part of television viewing now. Was there much like research and just looking at the kind of types of shows that reality shows that kind of involve poltergeists and hauntings and spiritual situations?
Growing up in the UK, there's a show called Most Haunted. And I always found that really interesting and like funny. I don't know if the intention was to be funny. And they use a lot of night vision stuff. So for me personally, I wanted to try and incorporate that kind of feel. Oh, Rob, this.
Sorry, I have an answer. My cats were just being annoying. Yeah. So Austin, as I mentioned before, our sound guy. So he's worked all over town here in Sacramento, and he used to work on a local ghost hunting show. So he was a really good resource for us. A lot of the stuff that we set up, a lot of the tricks to make things work. And because we had all those devices, we had all the stuff that they use. We made sure we reached out to the local paranormal communities and made sure everything that we used, if someone saw it, they'd be like, oh, cool. Yeah, I get that. That's working. But he was really, really helpful in kind of giving us a few tips and tricks on how the stuff works.
Well, one thing
what are the cats doing?
I could hear some.
So, I don't know. They're just so vocal. Tristan, you can edit this, all right? Like,
yeah.
Keep in.
Maverick's just crying. I'll get him on my lap and see if he stops.
Well, I was going to just say that one thing that definitely works is the location of the film, the school that you're shooting in, and we can get into it in a bit more detail. But I assume that you're in the location, and I was just kind of wanting to know. Where did you find this location, this abandoned school? How was it shooting in there? Was it as creepy as it looked? I mean, everyone can answer in terms of the experience about actually being in a location like that late at night.
So originally we had the outline. We knew we wanted Jesse and Leah to be a paranormal investigators, but we were originally going to do it in a hotel. So we found a really cool hotel location. We went to scout it. Talked to the owners. They were really happy for us to come and film. And then Rob and his wife found a school.
Yeah, so it's a school that's been closed for about 12 years. It's literally in like the center of Midtown Sacramento. So it's in the CBD area, which isn't a term they use here. But so it takes up this entire block and it's just unused. And since I moved here, I was like, well, I'm sure every filmmaker ever has filmed there. And then we quickly found that no one had and that it was probably difficult to track down. My wife's a teacher and she was able to kind of figure out who on the school board was the person to contact. So we reached out and they were like, we can't believe no one's ever asked us before. I was like, it's not easy to find you. So we're the first people to film there, which is great. And that basement is amazing. Now there's dogs outside barking. This is great. It was creepy the first night. So the first night that we filmed was with the scenes with Ariel playing Jane, who's doing the kind of urban exploring / ghost hunting stuff, where she kind of showed up and we're like, all right, so you need to film these parts because obviously we can't be in the shots. All right, go down those deep dark hallways, we'll see you on the other side. So it was fun, but I think it's just like any shooting location. I guess if you believe in ghosts, it's kind of, it's probably scary. But for us, like we got very comfortable there very quickly, and it felt like a home for us to all shoot at, which was nice.
How did you find the location, Greg? Were you tapping into its vibes, or do you remained pretty nonchalant about the experience?
So it's funny because I lived in a house in around 2014 in Pasadena. It was an old craftsman home. Moved in there, and right away, my friend who was living there had weird vibes. He's like, I'm hearing scratchings, I'm hearing noises. I was like, come on, dude, just give it a rest, just settle in. And then 3 a.m. one morning, pounding on my door saying, dude, there's somebody laughing in the basement. And they're wide awake. It wasn't like a thing where they made it up. And who would make up some old man laughing in the basement? Like, they're like, I listened to it, there's somebody laughing in the basement. So that kind of creeped me out. Then there was cigarette smoke in the laundry room. None of us smoked. So we had paranormal investigators come out. And I was just intrigued. I was like, you know, they come out only at night. And they did a whole, like, you know, research thing and tried to speak to the spirit. And apparently we had just gotten a kitten, and that is what woke up the spirit, because it was making noise. And I think it was reacting to youth or something. I don't know. The whole thing was very bizarre. And I kind of was 50-50 on it. I'm like, maybe it's just a coincidence. And then the paranormal investigator said that the tape that they had recorded had been erased. And I was like, how convenient. And they say sometimes spirits do that because they don't want you to have proof. So the whole thing was bizarre. It was fascinating. And I sort of moved on. And then maybe 6 months later, a buddy came over during the day, and we had been making best friends, actually. And we had the crew there, and they had left. So he was used to hearing, you know, having people at the house. So my buddy walked in with his little daughter. She was like 3 years old. And he looks around. He's like, where are the guys? And I was like, oh, there's no one else here. And he stopped. He's like, I could have sworn I just heard people talking like next door. And so I immediately correlated the kitten with the kid and started to think, holy shit, it just creeped me out. And I left this house shortly thereafter, and always was fascinated by paranormal and spirits and hauntings and all that. So when we got to the location in Sacramento, it reminded me a lot of the neighborhood that this house was at, even the colors and stuff. So I was just, and I've been around Sacramento, growing up, and I didn't know it too well, but this spot was just like perfect, the perfect vibe for this film. Like walking up to it, you just had questions on your own, even if you weren't making a movie. So when we were filming there, I could tap right back into that experience I had living in that old haunted house. And then when we started going down, you know, exploring it, especially as it got dark, it was just so much fun because we're all together. We got these cameras. We don't, you know, there's walls blocked off, and like we're moving things around. And you just feel like, you felt like we were all existing in this space, exploring it as we were filming. So the location really teed up how much fun we had making this movie.
And it's amazing that the geography of the basement makes no sense, because it's like they started doing some renovations before the place shut down. So there's just rooms in random spots that shouldn't be there. It's cool.
Oh, another thing, when we were filming, it was weird. We were pretty isolated, and there would be random people that would walk by outside. And we were in the middle of kind of getting ready to shoot a scene, and this guy walked by kind of frazzled, and like, you know, we don't know what his deal was. And it's, you know, neighborhood you don't really like pass through a lot, not a lot of foot traffic. And he like literally looks over and he points and he's like, dude, I love your work. And we all look at each other and we're like, wait, what? And he's like, you. And he's like pointing at me. I was like, wait. And then we all looked at each other and we thought it was like some sort of joke, or like maybe he was a spirit that was like passing through there. And he's like, maybe he's already saw infrared in the future, and he was like passing around to say how much he liked it. But it was just, yeah, the whole thing was had kind of a fun, eerie vibe to it.
It's funny, there's like four people that walked past throughout all our filming, and one of them recognized you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, I was trying to think, like, maybe it was, you thought it was someone else or something, like, because he kept saying you, and I was like, I don't know what you've seen, dude. Maybe there's interesting films made around there.
He saw Dubro Party Massacre 3.
That's right.
Well, one thing I wanted to also touch upon is that, the film focuses on these two siblings, these kind of, a guy who wants to become a sort of a television star based on his kind of paranormal sort of, skills, his kind of, his the fact that he can, that he says that he can kind of tap into these things, and his sister, who they're a bit sort of, they're not talking as much as they used to, but they're sort of thrown together by the producers, which, it's played by you, Randy, as well. I was just curious about these actors, Jesse Jansen and Lee Finity. They're really, everyone is great in the movie. I think, to me, the best part about this film is that the characters are all so interesting that I was kind of like, when it starts to go into the horror dimension, I was like, oh, look, I know this horror stuff has got to happen, but let's spend some more time with all of these characters. So with these two actors, had you worked with them before? Did you write the characters for them?
Me and Rob have worked with them lots of times. They're actually a couple in real life, which I think helps with the chemistry a lot. So in The Other Girl, they played a couple and they would argue a lot. So with this film, we wanted to do something where maybe they're siblings, something a bit different for them as well. We thought it'd be an interesting dynamic, and something where they don't argue as much. So me and Rob have a tendency to try and make Jesse's character look really bad. So that was our original intention, try and do that. But the more we went on with the process, I think the audience starts to gain sympathy for him. Mm-hmm. They probably want the show to work. And there's this mystery about Leah's character and why they separated. And yeah, I don't know if you want to add something else, Rob.
Yeah, it was literally like, all right, we've just done a film with both of them. How can we want to make sure their characters are completely different. We don't want to just kind of typecast them in our heads and then do that on the screen. And Leah brings so much to this film from a sensitivity standpoint, from an understanding standpoint. Like, and I appreciate you saying that you wanted to spend more time with the characters, which, I mean, our goal was to write good characters. And then we went and cast Randy, which I don't know why we did that. But Randy did great. It was funny because with Randy,
I'd be in the background. There'd be a scene where I just get Greg to sign some papers. That was what you told me. And then every scene, you would just point the camera at me and I have to think of something on the spot.
I just get writing more scenes for him. So, I think everyone in this film did a fantastic job. So, the frustrating thing is we can't talk too much about Greg's character, and Greg's character is getting so much love right now from the reviews, which is great. And you'll see why, but like, stop it, Maverick. See, even my cat likes Greg. But we just, the whole film was a lot of fun to make. And I'm glad that the character side of things is resonating, because that was literally our focus.
I think that sometimes, that's just the key to, horror, speaking of cat, there's always the cat moment in a horror film. Jump scares are kind of, easy to do, but, to have characters that you're interested in and that, you care about and you kind of like you get tense about what's going on. I think that's always a real achievement. Greg, before you were talking, we don't want to spoil anything in terms of where the film goes, but I thought it was interesting what you said before in terms of being kind of a bit inspired by some people that you met in real life, because this character on the surface, he doesn't seem necessarily like part of or scary, but there's a certain intensity that felt very kind of real and the type of thing that you might kind of find in everyday life if you deal with someone who might own a property or whatever. I was just curious about this character and what kind of informed the way that you would play him and the kind of people that inspired you with this role.
I just think it was interesting meeting people whose their identity is wrapped up with being something they think that they are. And the thing that they think that they are is like, it's cool, but the way they approach it is, it's so comedic, but they don't see it that way. Like, to the outside, they've attached themselves to, so for example, the guy that inspired this, I'm still in touch. I'm still like nice and all that, even though it was pretty insane what he did. And he explained it that in his life, in his eyes, he was always a thing. So he was like, he was a retired clown. And then he was a ranch manager. So for him, these things, it almost like he transformed himself into being like the cowboy. And I was like, that's cool, but why does it have to be approached in such a like live or die kind of way? Such a desperate, like clinging to wanting to be this character and live up to this character. Why not just be that? And we don't need to hear about it 24/7 or, and so it's just being around some of these characters that live in small towns that, you know, have kind of moved away from society or latched on that this is who they are. This is their property. This is their thing. And they've almost created a life in that environment that only exists to them, you know? And so I just had fun with the idea of, you know, different realities and the way a character might have the best of intentions, you know, wanting that, and how they go about doing it.
I was, because there's so many great little moments or things that you say, like,
you can talk about the owner's manual. That's fine. That's it.
Well, that was one of my favorite things is when you kept referring to yourself as the owner's manual, because it's such a just like, what does that mean? But I think that's
that was
such
one
a...
of the best things when I kept saying that Rob was just like, it's just so weird.
The first take when you did that, I just remember us cutting and like Jesse is so good at not laughing during a take. And he just like, he looked at me during the take, like, what the hell was that? And then as soon as we cut, he looked at me, he's like, what was that? Like, I love it, but what was it? And then we got the backstory of who the owner's manual was. But it was something that stayed in and it works really well. And it's resonating really well with people who are seeing it. So, yeah.
It's, I mean, that leads to another question just in terms of just, you know, you're shooting, yeah, the style of the film is a found footage film. And then the way that you can approach it with the filming is that, you know, things are happening in camera but yeah, I guess just asking about, was there a lot of improvisation? Was there a lot of things like that in terms of heat of the moment, kind of coming up with things, or was everything finally written and sculpted? I mean, how was the process with dialogue and improvisation?
So with the story, me and Rob, we outlined the whole thing. So we knew the general direction in which the story was going in. A lot of the dialogue was improvised, so it was in the moment. So especially me, I'm not an actor and I had to be in the film, so there'll be moments where a character would say something and I have to react in some way. So a lot of the reactions I have, that's me in real life. And then certain characters would say things, we'd take note of it, bring it back later. Actually, Greg was really good at, I remember seeing him on set and he'd be with this piece of paper. I was saying to Rob, what's this piece of paper he's carrying around? And we started to realize that he was taking notes of what other characters are saying and he'd bring it back later. And I think that was a really nice touch.
And everything that you said as well, like there's so many little so many little nuances and things that Greg intentionally, I know this because he brought it up in another interview, but Greg was intentionally keeping stuff from us and then trying it out. And I think that was fun and that really added a lot, and there was never a time where we said don't do that. Like, he did it and we're like, great. And do you remember,
yeah,
the point,
because Rob kept saying like, okay, like this part's coming here, are you ready for that, are you prepped? And I kind of played dumb and be like, yeah, I think we'll get there, you know, we'll figure it out. And I'd always see him kind of looking like, okay, is there a plan? So I always felt like it was fun to also, you know, surprise them too, because then it keeps, you know, it's gonna give their reactions a little bit of a boost.
Even Rob was surprising me. So usually after every take, me and Rob would discuss what happened, and then we'll discuss what to tell the actors. So for example, I'd go and talk to Jesse, give him notes. Rob would go and talk to Greg. And I remember Rob told Greg, keep referring to the show as a movie. And when Greg started doing that, I was surprised. I was like, where did that come from? And I really liked that nice little touch.
But it was, yeah, everyone had their start point and their end point in the scene, and we knew when a scene was going to end. And because of the style we shot, like, the whole film's essentially a jump cut, even though there's multiple takes. Like, you have to jump cut through found footage, so the footage is never believably found, but we've accepted as an audience that there's going to be jump cuts in a found footage film. So as long as the characters get to that end point and we can show that end point, what happens in between is really up to what we feel works from an entertainment standpoint. And we just had a lot of fun with this.
That's great to hear, and particularly in terms of Greg holding back or being surprising, because the character is surprising, and it's great to see that kind of maybe those real reactions in the moment catches on film.
I'm jealous you're not going to get to see the audience's reaction in Leaderville, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a great chance to see it on the big screen with, and, you know, I think always with horror films, a big audience, you know, or just seeing it with a crowd is just like, you know, that always just adds to the feeling. It's one thing, I mean, it's creepy to watch something at home by yourself, but with people, safely at a social distance is also a lot of fun as well. So we got the screening at Lunar Leaderville. What's next for InfraRed? Where do you take the film next?
So we've actually got a distribution. So this film is going to streaming through a bunch of different platforms. That's kind of, I can't announce where yet, but we were very lucky. We're with Terror Films, who've put out some amazing films, and they've done really well with some found footage stuff recently. Like, they've got like The Taking of Deborah Logan, Hell House LLC. So they've got some of like the heavy hitters in the genre. So we're really, really lucky that they've put their trust and their faith in this project. So wherever it ends up, we're going to be very happy. They've been amazing to work with. But we are doing some touring in the US. Not that that helps your listeners here in Perth. We do have some screenings coming up, which cast and crew are going to be at, and Greg obviously will be a part of coming up. I think we're starting those in May. So yeah, we're kind of unsure. Yeah, when you stop recording this, I can tell you what something else as well. So.
Well, I had another question for Greg, because I distinctly remember like one of the Q&As with The Room and The Disaster Artist a couple of years ago that, yeah, you had mentioned getting into the horror genre, I think, to an audience question. So we've got this film, InfraRed, but I know that there's another film on the cards as well. Can you talk a little bit about that, Greg?
Yeah, during the pandemic, I made a new movie called Miracle Valley that I'm hoping to bring, hopefully, to Luna audiences later this year. It's about a cult, and it was where actually we filmed that inspired the character, the owner's manual character. So they're definitely linked together. But it's about a cult, and which I think it's, we've tested it here. People have really dug it. It gets a lot of laughs, which is interesting. It's funny how, you know, you go off for something you don't know how people are going to respond to it, but it plays really well with the crowd. So I'm hoping to bring that one out later this year.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that one as well. And does this, I mean, with this experience in the horror genre, it seems that some actors, you know, it's good, you know, you can move between things, and then I feel like some actors go all the way, but how do you feel about the horror genre in the future? Do you feel like you'll be returning?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a lot of fun. You can try a lot of different things. You can do humor, you can do drama. So the next thing I want to do is a UFO abduction film. So I think continuing heading into peculiar genres and making stuff that, you know, is going to continue to surprise people like you. I mean, I think after all these years, you've been given, you know, with The Disaster Artist, with Best Friends and Sis, now InfraRed, I think you've been, you must be thinking, what the hell's coming next?
No, it's great to see, particularly, yeah, I mean, the Room, yeah, it's funny, you mentioned The Room as a cult, it is a cult, but that has continued to have a long life at Luna, but it's always great to see what you're doing next, and particularly things that you're involved with in terms of producing and writing. But it's been great to talk to all of you about Infrared, and we're looking forward to seeing it at Lunar Leaderville for one night with an audience and doing another Q&A afterwards. So yeah, looking forward to that. You can get your tickets online through the Lunar website, and yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much.